Welcome to Nice News. This is a broadcast about some unusual topics. I'm Joyce Vesper, your Sun Sounds of Arizona volunteer broadcaster. On Nice News, we cover information on various topics from all parts of the world. The program provides a time out from the daily news that doesn't always cover the happiest of information. So please give us a listen. Who knows what might give you a laugh or cause you to remember something from another era, or spike your interest, such as this article about female lumberjacks. Three women's world records set at the annual Lumberjack World Championship in Wisconsin. New women's records for the world have been set at the Lumberjack World Championship competition held in a small Wisconsin community full of high-powered sawing, chopping, log rolling, speed climbing, and cheers of yo-ho! This year, 66 men and 40 women attended the three-day competition in Hayward that ended last Saturday. They repeated 16 states and 9 counties. Competitors take gear seriously with custom-built chainsaws, carefully sharpened axes, and single buck saws that can cost upwards of $400 just to sharpen. Karolina Ubanova from the Czech Republic set world records in two events. She earned first place in the woman's underhand chop, cutting through 11 inches of white pine in 21.28 seconds. She also came in first in the women's standing chop, cutting through 9 inches of white pine in 19.38 seconds. Meredith Ingbritsen of Hayward set a world record in the women's boom run, sprinting across the water and back over 8 red cedar logs in 13.78 seconds. While women have been competing since the inaugural competition in 1960, the events they participate in have expanded significantly, according to organizers. They started competing just in log rolling, and now they participate in more than 20 timber sports events. "When I started chopping, I was chopping with the men," said Nancy Zalewski, a competitor for 27 years who has trained others, including fellow participant Kate Witkowski. The tradition of competition among lumberjacks began in the 1890s, according to the organization. The competition is held in the Lumberjack Bowl on the shores of Lake Hayward. In the past, the area has been a holding pond for log drives down the Namekagon River. The lumberjack theme is ever present, with children in lumberjack socks, flannels, and suspenders, and brands handing out blow-up axes and toy chainsaws. Outside the competition bowl, there are wood carving demonstrations, log rolling practice for kids, live music, food trucks, and axe-themed events. "The culture of it, I think, is really wonderful," said Witkowski. "I don't know any other sport where the athletes support each other like we do here, because it's such a niche sport and because the gear is so hard to come by that we're all just trying to get better." This article, three women's world records set at the annual Lumberjack World Championship in Wisconsin. Not a bad idea. Goats munch away at wildfire risks in Southern California. Taya Tragish writes the article. A very cute fire prevention crew has been hard at work in Westlake Village, California, a city in Los Angeles County. Goats are munching away at dry brush and weeds, clearing out highly flammable vegetation in areas where the threat of wildfires looms large year-round, but especially during the summer and early fall. The four-legged firefighters are uniquely suited for the job. Goats are known for being voracious herbivores. A single goat can consume about 3% to 5% of its body weight in dry matter each day. They're able to scale steep hillsides, canyons, and uneven terrain that machinery may struggle to access. The method is also environmentally friendly, thinning out fire brush without chemicals and minimizing the risk of erosion. The positive impact on the neighbors is just the cherry on the top. The whole community loves to see the goats. Taya Tragish, a Westlake Village resident and sister of Nice News own Marika Spitukalski, tells us cars line up to see them. It's a wonderful, wholesome summer experience for people of all ages. Typically, the goats stay in one designated area anywhere from a few days to a few weeks before moving to a new location. It's a case in which efficiency is a tad bittersweet. As Tragish's 5-year-old daughter, Sienna, said, "I don't want them to go." And her 3-year-old son, Dean, agreed, "I wish the goats were here every day," he said. This article, not a bad idea. Goats munch away at wildfire risks in Southern California. Well, we go from goats to birds. Costumed ugly mom, that's what I said, ugly mom, helps orphaned sandhill cranes. Laura Baesis writes the article. Minnesota wildlife rehabilitator and ornithologist Fox Feather Zenkova trades sequins for imitation bird feathers when getting dressed up for a Saturday night. Recently, Zenkova donned an elaborate costume nicknamed Ugly Mom, all to care for an orphaned sandhill crane. Outfits like Ugly Mom disguise human wildlife and rehabilitators as adult animals, allowing them to care for orphaned animals and lessen the risk that the baby will imprint on a human before release. Many times a chick is found on its own, and a young sandhill crane should never be alone, Zenkova, who runs Vulture Conservancy and Fox Feather and Fox Loft, tells Popular Science. They stick like glue to their parents' side, not straying more than a few yards from them until they're basically full size and it's time for migration in the fall. Sandhill cranes are one of the tallest birds in North America, at nearly 4 feet tall with an impressive 7-foot wingspan. During the summer months, they're found in small bogs, marshes, and prairies across northern North America and the southeastern United States. During the winter, large flocks of sandhill cranes are found in Bosque del Apache, New Mexico, and Anahuac National Wildlife Refuge in Texas. They move with a prehistoric elegance, and their loud, bugling calls can travel for miles across wetlands, sounding like something you'd hear in Jurassic Park, Zenkova says. The sandhill cranes are also fast learners, highly observant, and they have a great memory and are considered highly intelligent. However, this intelligence and innate social behavior can be a challenge in rehabilitation setting. Craving strong social bonds and with eager minds, young cranes can become attached to people surprisingly quickly, Zenkova explains. Because they learn social behaviors from the adults around them, human imprinting can make it difficult or even impossible for them to live a normal life in the wild. That's why rehabilitators go to extraordinary lengths to keep human interaction to a minimum. Using crane costumes, puppets, mirrors, and captive surrogate foster cranes to help chicks identify with their own species instead of people. Another rehabilitation challenge is more physical and can get uncomfortable in the summer. Cranes also move a lot and can walk mere hours after hatching. After a few days, they can cover miles with their parents. This movement is critical to a young crane's health and development, and they can grow up to 1 inch per day. This requires a lot of dedicated space and also time. And here, during an uncommonly hot Minnesota summer this year, it means me slogging around in the sun in full ugly mom costume for hours a day, foraging and exercising different babies, said Zenkova. Currently, Zenkova's clinic is caring for 4 orphaned sandhills, with a 5th on the way. Most chicks are orphaned after one or both parents are struck and killed by cars while crossing the road. Young sandhill cranes are rarely orphaned on purpose. It is usually because one or both parents have been struck by the car. If you believe that you have found an orphan sandhill crane chick, it's important to keep your distance at first. It is rare that a parent will abandon a chick, and they may be hidden in vegetation or nearby, out of sight. One of the orphan cranes came in this year because it was parked under someone's bird feeder for 2 weeks with no parents in sight. The homeowners, understandably, thought maybe the parents just visited occasionally, like a mother deer or rabbit would, but it's not normal for a baby crane to stay in one place alone like that, and it did need help. Since these are wild birds, do not attempt to care for one yourself or turn to the internet for advice. According to Zenkova, it is full of misinformation that can end up harming the bird, since rehabilitation is more than just feeding the animal. Reach out to a licensed animal rehabilitation center in your area as soon as possible, especially if the animal has obvious injuries or is constantly calling out. Animal Help Now can help you find licensed rehabilitators in your area. Animal rehabilitators are also looking for volunteers to learn how to care for animals as well as the public's support through donations. After orphaned or injured cranes successfully heal, complete swimming therapy to strengthen broken wings and broken legs, or to learn how to be social with other cranes, they can be released. In Minnesota, where Zenkova works, rehabilitated sand cranes can be released in the fall. Rehabilitating cranes is a ton of work, but watching a crane chick heal and thrive is a great privilege for me, Zenkova says. There's nothing better than the feeling of seeing them rejoin their counterparts once again and get a second chance at a wildlife at release. This article, written by Laura Baisis, Costumed Ugly Mom Helps Orphaned Sandhill Cranes. Allison Aubrey writes, engaging with the arts can slow biological aging, study says. If you want to stack the odds in favor of living a long life, you've already heard the advice to eat well and exercise over and over again. So here's a new idea. Ignite your creative expression and participate more in the arts. A new study finds this may help boost longevity by slowing down your rate of aging. If you're a painter or a pianist, maybe you've noticed how making art or music can lower your stress level. Creative expression can have profound effect on your biology. Researchers at the University College London had a hunch the benefits went beyond this. They analyzed survey data and blood samples from about 3,500 adults who were part of a long-term study in the UK, including some who were very involved in the arts, as well as others who had very little engagement with the arts. Then they used epigenetic clocks to assess the participants' rate of aging. We found in the study that arts engagement was related to 4% slower aging rates, meaning people were about a year younger biologically if they were regularly engaged in the arts, researcher Daisy Fancourt explains. This is actually the same reduction in biological aging that we saw for physical activity. The participants had answered a range of questions on everything from their exercise habits to questions about more than 40 different art activities. The slower rate of aging is held up for both the doers of the arts, people who dance, sing, or make art, as well as those who take art in by going to concerts, the theater, or museums. The findings are published in the journal Innovation in Aging. Honesty is really surprising me, says Stephen Horvath, a geneticist and biostatistician at UCLA. He developed the Horvath Aging Clock, a tool researchers use to assess a person's biological age based on specific chemical changes in their DNA over time, measuring the rate of aging. The authors of the new study use 7 epigenetic clocks, including a Horvath clock, each of which adds different layers of nuance in interpreting aging, morbidity, and mortality risk. Prior studies have shown that healthy habits can slow epigenetic aging, and this new study adds a novel insight. I think this is a very rigorous study, and what is particularly new to me is that arts engagement may have comparable effects to physical activity. Horvath explains, a person's chronological age is their actual age in years based on the date of your birth certificate. But given that people don't age at the same rate, an epigenetic clock can gauge your rate of aging or your biological age. Overall, I feel this study moves the epigenetic clock field to new frontiers, he said, toward evaluating the effects of leisure activities on aging. How does an epigenetic clock work? Epigenetic clocks are tests that analyze patterns of DNA methylation. As we get older, chemical tags called methyl groups latch onto our DNA. The pattern of these tags gives researchers an indicator of the biological age. You can use methylation to measure time in all the cells that contain DNA. Horvath spent years at UCLA studying how this molecular biomarker of aging can affect people. In his research, he documented how methylation changes one of the four letters of the DNA, namely the C, which stands for cytosine. Some of these changes protect us, he says, but others can lead to adverse consequences. He and the collaborators have identified the location in the DNA where the pattern of chemical modifications are most highly correlated with aging change. They found that the higher the proportion of methylated DNA in certain locations, the more accelerated the person's biological age. We spent over 10 years trying to understand what factors accelerate your epigenetic clock, Horvath says. They found that smoking, unhealthy eating, and a sedentary lifestyle, and pretty much any lifestyle factor that is bad for you, accelerates the clock. Conversely, a diet rich in micronutrients from fruits and vegetables, a healthy body weight, and regular exercise all slow methylation, a non-pharmaceutical intervention. The University College London study suggests looking further at the health benefits of the arts. The survey data included only a snapshot of participants' arts activity as they were asked about what sort of artistic hobby and cultural event they had participated in over the last 12 months. It's an intriguing observation, but it definitely needs to be replicated, Horvath says. Many questions remain. For instance, whether a person who is not active in the arts now could take up a new music or art hobby in midlife and experience a slowdown in aging, and how frequently they would need to participate to move the needle. Cardiologist Doug Vaughn of Northwestern University says creative activities can be the antidote to stress. When people reduce their long-term stress level, he says, this may help tamp down inflammation, which is one mechanism by which the arts may be linked to a slower rate of aging. The arts, or being creative or enjoying the arts, is a non-pharmacological intervention. Vaughn says that people may enjoy. One of his new research projects will test the effects of a stress reduction program on epigenetic age. The biology is pretty clear, he says, pointing to the negative effects of chronic stress on health. Vaughn says many of his patients tell him they are interested in finding ways to stay healthy that don't require a prescription drug. So he says when something can be fun and also good for our health, it's a win-win. So go out and see what you can do by getting engaged in the arts. This article by Allison Aubrey, Engaging with the Arts Can Slow Biological Aging, study shows. Neural bypass helps paralyzed man rediscover movement and touch. After losing movement and sensation below his chest, Keith Thomas is making encouraging gains through an innovative system that reconnects his brain with the nerves in his arms and hands. Known as a double neural bypass, the technology uses a computer to carry signals around the damaged portion of Thomas's nervous system. Even more promising, some of his renewed strength, sensation, and function remain when the system is switched off, a hopeful sign for the future of paralysis treatment. Thomas, who is from Massapequa, broke his neck in the summer of 2020. He had been relaxing beside a swimming pool when he decided to dive in aggressively as usual. His next memory was of being flown by a helicopter to a hospital. 3 months later, the Feinstein Institutes of Medical Research invited him to participate in a 3-year clinical trial. The study centered on double neuro bypass surgery, which creates a new route for communication between the brain and limbs when the natural pathway has been disrupted. Electrodes implanted in Thomas's brain recognize his intention to move. Those signals are transmitted to his hands and arms, helping activate the appropriate muscles. The system restores information flowing in the opposite direction. Sensors placed in his fingertips detect the presence and shape of objects, then send information to the brain through the implanted electrodes. This two-way exchange is what makes the bypass doable. Everyday sensations and movements return. With the system's help, Thomas can move his hands and arms while once again experiencing meaningful sensations, including the softness of his dog's fur and the touch of his sister's hand. He can also distinguish between objects such as a ball, a coffee cup, and egg, allowing him to adjust his grip and pressure to suit what he is holding. After 35 weeks of training, Thomas recorded an 86% increase in his strength in his right arm and 62% increase in his left. His range of motion has also improved considerably. Once able to raise his hand beyond his neck, he can now perform practical movements such as scratching his nose and wiping his mouth. The findings were recently detailed in a paper published in Nature. A breakthrough filled with possibilities. For me, this is an incredible moment, said Professor Chad Boughton, who leads the Feinstein team responsible for developing the technology. For years, we have been wanting to really tackle the restoration of movement and the sense of touch and bring those together, and we've also wanted to create lasting effects, Boughton said in a video release. I think we're going to continue to see progress, and I think it'll be applicable to the millions of folks around the world who really need this technology. Thomas's achievements offer a joyful glimpse of what may become possible for people living with paralysis. Because his recovery is continuing, researchers do not know yet how much additional movement and sensation he may regain with more time and with training. This article, Neuro Bypass Helps Paralyzed Man Rediscover Movement and Touch. Kelsey Fledler joyfully makes history with solo row from California to Hawaii. As the United States marked the 250th birthday, Kelsey Fledler had a remarkable celebration of her own. She became the first woman to row solo from California to Hawaii. After 43 days and roughly 2,400 miles across the Pacific, Fledler guided her 21-foot rowboat, Lily, into Ala Wai Boat Harbor in Honolulu after 9 p.m., where more than 100 people from across the country were waiting to welcome her with warmth and admiration. Her arrival brought more than one historic achievement. Fledler also became the fastest person of any gender to complete the solo row from California to Hawaii and the youngest woman ever to make the journey alone. If any part of this made at least one person feel a little bit more powerful in their own skin, I couldn't ask for anything else, and I'm happy, she shared in a social media vlog entry on day 43 of her voyage. Fledler is no stranger to adventure on the water. She spent 8 years as the Grand Canyon rafting guide and 2024 led a 4-woman rowing team from Monterey to Hawaii. This time, however, she crossed the Eastern Pacific by herself, an experience she said she loves. Through her Instagram updates, Fledler brought followers along for the highs, hardships, and quiet moments of life at sea. She faced rough water, stubborn currents, sun exposure, and the daily work of preparing meals aboard a small boat. Yet even as she moved closer to Oahu, she found beauty in the journey itself, spending part of day 37 grieving the loss of this row when she realized she was within 500 miles of land. Her achievement easily surpassed the previous women's record of 86 days, 10 hours, and 5 minutes held by Leah Ditton, according to Ocean Rowing Society International. Fledler also beat the men's record of 52 days. Even more impressively, her solo crossing took only about 3 days longer than the 2024 journey she completed with a 4-person crew. Fledler reached Oahu in time to celebrate her birthday, adding another joyful milestone to an already unforgettable arrival. Her row also carried a generous purpose. Along the way, she helped raise $30,000 for a charity supporting the physical and mental care of Colorado River rafting guides. It was a powerful Pacific crossing filled with courage, heart, and a bright reminder of what one determined person can do. This article, Kelsey Fledler joyfully makes history with solo row from California to Hawaii. And since we're coming to the end of the program, I'd like to leave you with this quote of the day. It's by Jacqueline Woodson. How can I explain to anyone that stories are like air to me? I breathe them in and let them out over and over again. Jacqueline Woodson. Well, I hope you enjoyed today's articles. Please join us again next time when we cover some very unusual stories on Nice News. This has been Joyce Vesper, your volunteer broadcaster for Sun Sounds of Arizona, a radio reading service. Stay healthy, everyone. Be well and be happy. Bye-bye.